welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of The Armchair Survivalist. My name's Kurt Wilson, The Armchair Survivalist, and welcome to the show. If you go to armchairsurvivalist.com, you'll find all kinds of different ways to listen to me. You'll find get a little bio on me there. There's a chat room you can go into and listen to the show there or chat there. If you scroll down any of the pages, armchairsurvivalist.com, you'll see ways to listen. And I name a podcast venue and I'm on it. Everything from YouTube to iHeartRadio to Stitcher, Anchor, TuneIn, Google, Amazon, you name it. I'm on all of them, including Pandora, iHeart. I'm also on Global Star 3 Satellite. And on that bottom of any of the pages, you'll see the little satellite dish swinging back and forth. And you'll see in red there, 24/7 live feed. Click on either of those icons there and you can listen to Global Star 24/7. Whoever's going to be on, I have no idea who's on after me. You can listen in the chat room. On every page is a box at the top of it that says, there's two little boxes there. One says, listen to my show live Sunday in the chat room. Click on that and you'll listen to me live. Or the next box is listen 24 hours a day to the recent show of the Armchair Survivalist. Click here and you'll be able to hear the most recent show that I do for the next 7 days until I do my next show. If you want to download any of my shows, on the left-hand side of any page, you see the little white nipper dog listening to the RCA Victor gramophone. You click on that. That'll take you to a page where I list chronologically all of the shows that I've done for the current year. Now, everything I talk about, I put up show notes. There's a page on the left-hand side of any of the pages. You see the links, home, chat room, show notes. You click on show notes. It'll take you to the show notes and archive page. I list all of the shows that I do for that current year. You go to those any of those links, and you click on it, and it takes you to an individual page for each show, and I list everything. A lot of times I have special books that I put up there. I have special announcements that I put up there. So you just go there, and you can see what I'm talking about at any time. So I'm not one of these hosts that just pulls stuff out of my hat and just chats on about it, unless I warn you about that first. So let me get business out of the way. Survival Enterprises is my company. You go to survivalenterprises.com or S.E. Samuel Edwards, the numeral 1, S-E-1.us. That's S-E-1.us. And poke around and you can see what we have for sale. We have a lot of nutritional products is basically what we do. And we have a store in Hayden, Idaho. You can come up, visit us in a government way, and poke around inside the store. Not only do we have everything in the store that we have online, we're downsizing our house, so I've got all kinds of oddball stuff in here, too. You never know what we're going to have in the store. Well, let's see. Let's get into the economy. Now, I mentioned this before, so I'm just going to cover it a little bit. This is about office buildings throughout the United States. Because of this pandemic and this communist shutdown, the New York Times has an article. It's called Manhattan's Office Buildings Are Empty. But for how long? Here's the thing, and yes, they're empty. Not just Manhattan, but all of New York City, all of San Francisco, all of Los Angeles, all of you name it. All of the cities that run because there are hundreds of thousands of people working in the offices who go downstairs and now go outside and they go shopping and they go to little restaurants and they eat. So there's a whole domino effect that's happening in the economy. The buildings, these giant buildings, these office buildings, they have maybe 5 to 10% occupation rate right now. That's it. Companies are realizing that they can put their employees, the majority of them, and have them work at home. Put them at home. They can work at home. So now that we've had 6 months or so of employees working at home, these companies are looking at the lease that they're paying, sometimes millions of dollars a year, on these giant buildings that they no longer need. So they're going to let the leases go up. I'm seeing this in a small application of this up here in North Idaho. These companies are saying, we don't need this space anymore. We don't need this building anymore. We don't need to sell retail anymore. We're doing great online. So they're closing down these office buildings. They're just not paying the lease. They're just letting them go. And what's going to happen now? Now the people who own the buildings, if they have any mortgage on the buildings, they're not going to be able to make the mortgages. The domino effect goes both directions. It goes downhill to all the people that service the office workers. And this is taxis, massage parlors, believe it or not, dentists, doctors, restaurants, delis, delivery services. And then you start going back up the chain to the company that has a lease on a building or on office space. And then who are they leasing it from? What corporation are they leasing it from? And that corporation, do they have to answer to their shareholders why they're not making any money? We're seeing people close their businesses and just disappear. Personally, I've seen it here up in North Idaho here. These are very high-end franchises that just all of a sudden, Monday morning, you go there to get your coffee or get something to eat or rent some tools or something, and there's a sign on the door saying, thanks for the memories. There's nothing left. They're gone. And this is what's happening because people are allowing this pandemic to occur. Up here in North Idaho, we have a saying, which I can't use over the air. But when they tell us that we have to close down, or when they tell us that we have to wear masks, or when they tell us that we're a danger to each other and we must be deathly afraid of each other, we use this saying, and it has something to do with self-reproductive capabilities with the sphincter. Well, you know, it's just, I don't want to go into it. But anyway, this is going to be very, very, very destructive economically, no matter who gets into office within the next 6 months. It's being kept not a secret, but it's being kept as quiet as possible to do what? To not make us upset or to not show us the truth? I don't know. I remember Disney when they said, we're going to be opening up Disney. We're going to be opening up our theme parks and letting everybody come in there and poke around and do whatever they're going to do and have a good time. And we're going to have everybody wearing masks and Mickey Mouse and Minnie Mouse are going to be wearing masks and blah, blah, blah. Well, it turns out that the general public is not in for that kind of crap. So they're not going to Disneyland. Do you know how much a ticket costs to get into Disneyland in Los Angeles area, San Diego area? It's over $100. Over $100 to go see Disneyland. When I was a kid, it was like, hey, let's go to Disneyland. Okay, sure. I got $20. Not anymore. Disney is going to be laying off almost 30,000 employees in Southern California. There's a lot of different parks they have, not just Disneyland itself. This is just a little tiny piece and an example of what's happening worldwide. Remember the places you like to go to have enjoyment on vacation? Well, they're closed. So what about the people that work there? And you have the domino effect that goes down to all the employees and below them, and a domino effect that goes up to the corporations that have to realize a profit so that they can stay in business. We're losing history. Not only are the communists worldwide tearing down history, but we're just losing it. And it's dying and rotting. Now we're going to get into the Food and Health Department. Research has been done on this whole thing, this whole pandemic. And it turns out that it has shown that Chinese government deliberately created a propaganda campaign to force the world into lockdown. This is perfect. This is they had what they call on the internet bots. These are robots or programs, basically, that are programmed to do certain things. You can go onto Twitter or Facebook, and you will see articles that pop up. These robots put them together. These programs put them together. You go into chat rooms, and you see somebody saying, "Oh yeah. Well, this stuff is deadly and dangerous, and you got to lock yourself down and put filters on all of your windows and block the air so you can't get diseased." These are programs. These aren't real humans that are doing this. And you know, I get people still now saying, "Well, you got to stop saying the Chinese." You know what? I'm sorry, Chinese is communist. Everyone from China is a communist. There are very few from China that move to the United States that still don't have communist tendencies. This is how they were raised. This is how their parents were raised. This is how their parents' parents were raised. And before then, they were killed if they didn't agree to be raised as a communist. The research has proven that China purposely created the propaganda campaign. They purposely released the virus, and then they purposely released a propaganda campaign to force the world into lockdown. What does that do? Well, if I had an enemy that I wanted to beat, I would make him so much in fear that he would never leave his home. And then I can do what I want. And that's basically what's happening with China right now. They're pretty much doing what they want. At least they're trying to. The Center for Research on Globalization, this is an organization in Canada, has a article out where a nurse anonymously has come out and tried to explain exactly how worthless the test is that they're using to test everybody. It's the PCR test, RT-PCR test. It is totally, not sort of, it's 100% unreliable because it does not detect the SARS-2 coronavirus 19. It does not detect it. That's not what it was for. And this is something that people just don't grasp. Now, I've mentioned this before, and what we're going to do now is we're going to get a little more in-depth on it, because there are some data that most people have no idea exists, and they don't understand how these tests are and how we can have millions and millions of people that test positive, but only 0.001% ever go in a hospital. So here's a little clip that I hope explains it to you in a clearer manner than I can.
The COVID-19 PCR tests are scientifically meaningless, notes this article on theoffguardian.org. And the PCR test is where they put a swab up your nose, or they may put a swab down your throat. They say the whole world relies on these PCR tests to, quote, diagnose this supposed viral infection, but the science is clear the PCR test is not fit for this purpose. They note the PCR test is used to identify, quote, positive patients, where this is usually equated with somebody who is supposedly infected, but they note the PCR tests are meaningless as a diagnostic tool to determine an alleged infection. The inventor of this PCR technology, his name was Kerry Mullis. He won a Nobel Prize for this back in 1993. They say, unfortunately, he passed away last year, but there is no doubt that the biochemist regarded the PCR as inappropriate to detect a viral infection. The reason for this is that the intended use of PCR was and still is to apply as a manufacturing technique to replicate DNA sequences millions and billions of times, and not as a diagnostic tool to detect viruses. And they say, how declaring a viral pandemic based on the PCR test can end in disaster was described by Gina Collada in her 2007 New York Times article titled "Faith in Quick Test Leads to Epidemic That Wasn't." They say the CDC and the FDA concede in their files that these PCR tests are not suitable to detect this supposed virus, the SARS-CoV-2 virus. The CDC is saying that a positive test may not indicate the presence of an infectious virus. The CDC says the positive test does not mean that SARS-CoV-2 is the causative agent for clinical symptoms. And the CDC says that this test cannot rule out diseases caused by other bacterial or viral pathogens. And the FDA says that a positive PCR test does not rule out bacterial infections or co-infections with other viruses. And they say, remarkably, the instruction manuals of the PCR tests can read that they are not intended as a diagnostic tool to determine if somebody is infected with a virus or not. For example, they say that one of the manuals for the PCR test says that the PCR assays are not intended for use as an aid to diagnose coronavirus infection. They note the WHO has financial ties with the drug companies, as was shown by the British Medical Journal back in 2010, and experts have criticized this notorious corruption and conflicts of interest at the WHO have continued or even grown since then. They say, finally, the reasons and possible motives behind all these PCR tests and claiming, oh my God, there's a record number of cases, which is completely and totally meaningless, and they say this remains speculative, but the numbers generated by these PCR tests do not in the least justify frightening people who have tested positive and do not justify imposing lockdown measures that plunge countless people into poverty and despair.
And all of these facts that this gentleman talked about can be easily verified. And this, again, this is another nail in the coffin of the pandemic and the fact that this is nothing more than a globalist communistic takeover attempt of the United States. There is a woman named Liz Wheeler, and I like the way she talks. She has this, she's on YouTube, and she has different things, like six things you never knew about blankety blank, 10 things you never knew about blah, blah, blah. Well, she's got this thing that came out, 6 COVID-19 facts the mainstream media won't report, but I will.
Facts about COVID-19 that you won't hear from the mainstream media or from public health officials. Since they won't report the latest science and data to you, I will. According to new data compiled by Dr. Andrew Bostrom about COVID-19 infections on college campuses at 37 U.S. universities, there have been 48,300 positive COVID-19 tests among students. But these infections have resulted in just 2 hospitalizations and 0 deaths. Compare that to the 1,800 annual deaths from alcohol poisoning that happen on college campuses nationwide. According to new data from Brown University, Reopening K through 12 schools may be less risky than expected. Using data from more than 550 schools, the Brown University team found a small 0.078% rate of confirmed cases among students and a 0.15% rate of confirmed cases among teachers. In fact, the rate of positive COVID-19 tests in schools is much lower than the surrounding community. According to an NPR report, the hybrid model of schooling, where students go into school some days and stay home some days, is resulting in the most COVID infections among school staff compared to full capacity in-person school or remote schooling. These are the numbers. According to this tracking data, schools that are teaching students in person, full capacity, are experiencing staff COVID cases at a rate of 21 per 100,000. Schools that are teaching students remotely full-time are experiencing staff COVID cases at a rate of 24 per 100,000. But schools that are teaching students with a hybrid model are experiencing staff COVID cases at 52 per 100,000. A large study from Scotland finds that exposure to children is protective against COVID-19 for adults. This study examined 300,000 NHS workers in Scotland. The study found, and I quote, increased household exposure to young children was associated with an attenuated risk of testing positive for SARS-CoV-2 and appeared to also be associated with an attenuated risk of COVID-19 disease severe enough to require hospitalization, end quote. The significance here is data like this further suggests that there is significant T-cell cross-immunity from common cold coronaviruses, which would significantly reduce the percentage of the population who need to contract the COVID-19 virus before an area reaches herd immunity. According to the latest CDC data on infection fatality rates and survival rates of COVID-19 by age group, if you contract COVID-19 and are between the ages of 0 and 19 years old, you have a 99.997% rate of survival, which equals just 0.003% fatality rates. If you contract COVID-19 and are between the ages of 20 and 49 years old, you have a 99.98% rate of survival, which equals just 0.02% fatality rate. This, of course, according to the U.S. government's own data, is equal to or less than influenza fatality rates for people under 50. According to a new preprint about the prevalence of the COVID-19 virus, the virus may be far more prevalent and far less deadly than we have been told. The study examined 615 adults in Tokyo who were given COVID-19 antibody tests. At the first test, only 6% had antibodies to the virus. But by midsummer, nearly 47% of the 615 adults, nearly half, had antibodies to the COVID-19 virus, despite the fact that not a single person in this study was hospitalized or died from the virus. The scientists conducting the study concluded, and I quote, COVID-19 infection may have spread widely across the general population of Tokyo despite the very low fatality rate, end quote. Since public health officials, elected Democrats, and the mainstream media refuse to report any of this to you, I will.
And I'll have a link to her website so you can go there. The Ice Age farmer is realizing, as a lot of us are, that this pandemic is nothing more than a piece of the pie, and the globalists are now trying to add all the rest of the pieces and come up with better ways to subjugate the world.
Ladies and gentlemen, the endgame comes into view as calls to extend the lockdowns for COVID-19 in perpetuity now, because after all, it's good for the environment. It all makes sense now in terms of why we have the deployment of the police state in this pandemic 2020, the perfect data awareness of contact tracing, and these lockdowns all are being normalized. They are getting people acclimated to the complete police state that is needed for this kind of a climate lockdown.
It feels like Europe has come to a standstill. Streets normally filled with vehicles are empty as countries effectively shut down. Surely this has to be good for the environment. And there could possibly be another benefit of today's lower air pollution, as there's a chance COVID-19 may be transported on particles of pollution.
And we've already seen the appropriation of the contact tracing ideas that were pushed out in COVID-19 and applied now to carbon emissions and cow farts. So Al Gore came out and announced climate tracing. Again, just sneaking over, just going to borrow. Now that you're used to contact tracing, we're just going to take that back over here. adhere to the climate world, and we're going to deploy a network of satellites up in the sky that monitors all emissions from all over the world in real time. We can track down to a farm where there's an unauthorized cow from the methane. We can track down, name it, trace all human-caused greenhouse gas emissions to their sources. This is a perfect information awareness grid, and it's now being implemented right now, climate tracing. But now, again, as I said, we're hearing the words climate lockdown, because after all, the world has been approaching this tipping point, the fiery hothouse oblivion that Earth will be descending into if we don't use deep adaptation and just all walk away from life as we've known it. Quote, in the near future, the world may need to resort to lockdowns again, and this time because of the climate emergency. Look at the ice, the raging wildfires, it's all going on. Under a climate lockdown, governments would limit use of private vehicles, it would ban consumption of red meat, and it would impose extreme energy-saving measures and almost certainly electrical rationing thanks to the smart grids. Yes, that's what they're really for, monitoring and rationing power, while fossil fuel companies would have to stop drilling. All of these things have been described as deep adaptations or as the Green New Deal. We've heard people talking for years about the fact that they want to do this. They want to destroy the world economy and enter the post-human world. But now it's being described, borrowing on the language from COVID-19 and the fact that people are already in a confused, abused state of learned helplessness and just utterly depressed. We'll just shove people that much further now into a climate lockdown. It's stunning that this is all being described as we have to do this or else the temperatures will continue rising, even as that narrative seems to have been lost, right? We've got President Trump coming out and saying that the temperatures will be decreasing from here on out, basically acknowledging that we've entered global cooling.
It'll start getting cooler.
You just
watch.
He's not just making this up, right? He's armed with the data fresh from NOAA that unambiguously demonstrates following a relatively weak solar cycle 25, by the time we hit 2030, these sunspots drop off and we enter a long, protracted, deep, grand solar minimum of the Maunder type, which will have tremendous, devastating effects to all agricultural production, seismic and volcanic activity, hailstorms, all the things we associate with galactic cosmic rays, and I'm sure that will then be blamed on carbon emissions in the future. But NASA is admitting that solar cycle 25 seems to be looking very weak. Newsweek is even acknowledging this is mainstream media at this point. Why is the sun quiet even though we've entered solar cycle 25? What does that mean? And then Indian media is even printing the fact, acknowledging that we're entering a modern grand solar minimum, talking about the fact that it's a very weak solar cycle. Look at this quote. Scientists say the sun may be going through a long period of decreased activity known as the modern grand solar minimum from 2020 now to 2053. Boy, if you haven't heard this for years on this channel, the Ice Age Farmer channel, then welcome. This is where we are now. And it's now mainstream media that we've entered a modern grand solar minimum and that temperatures will be cooling. And that is why they are on this agenda right now. Just take those lies, blow them up even bigger, and bum rush the entire global population to shove these agendas down their throats. Climate lockdowns, more pandemics, blame it on the CO2 and the cow farts. We've seen all of the scripting around this massive psyop on the entire population of Earth. It's stunning. But let's just explore what's going on here. I've mentioned Atomo, which is the upcycled coffee company. But there's much more to this idea of creating food from trash and recycling food and all of these sorts of things than just eliminating farming and ranching. This is, as I just said, moving towards a post-human world. Let's take Atomo as just one case study, one vector in to removing humans from all processes, this gradual pursuit of transhumanist goals. If you eliminate coffee and you make it as Atomo is, instead from, you can read here, they're making it from upcycled plant materials like pits, seeds, and stems that would otherwise be thrown away. If we start serving trash and calling it coffee, then you eliminate how many jobs of people that are out there growing coffee, the farmers who own the farms, the people doing the labor, the people harvesting the beans, packaging them, shipping them, transporting them, roasting them, serving them up in barista bars, whatever. There's people all along the supply chain who simply lose their jobs, who suddenly also become non-essential workers. And over time, more and more people will become non-essential workers. This is happening, like I said, across many different vectors at the same time. If you remove eggs and serve eggs instead that are made from mung beans that are grown in indoor vertical farms. You get rid of all of the poultry farmers. You get rid of all of the people harvesting the eggs, packaging them, and distributing them. You can see how each of these has huge ramifications throughout the industries that they touch. That is what's going on here. The climate lockdown is the shutdown, the continuing of this shutdown we've already started in 2020, of all human activity on this planet, and the introduction of perfect monitoring, climate tracing, and perfect control, climate lockdown of those of us that remain. It's time, ladies and gentlemen, that we fight back. If we do not do so now, we will lose the opportunity. At first they came for those wearing masks, then they came for the farmers, and then they came for the coffee roasters, but they are coming for all of us, and we need to stop this process. We need to turn away from these transhumanists, the technocrats, and their totalitarian agenda to take total control and move back to very small local communities using indigenous practices, regenerative permaculture-like opportunities to grow your own food for your community, and not sign on to this global upcycled trash that ultimately leads to the destruction of the human race.
And I have another little nail for the coffin of the globalists and the fraud that's being perpetrated on everyone in the world. Dr. Anthony Fauci, this is the so-called expert who is giving his advice to President Trump. And because of this advice from this expert, the pretty much world has been shut down and the economy worldwide is being destroyed. It's based from data from this expert. Now, here's the thing. He's the head of the National Institute of Health. In 2005, they researched chloroquine, hydroxychloroquine, and concluded it was effective at stopping the SARS coronavirus in its tracks. See, a coronavirus, there's hundreds of them, and this is just another version of it. So in 2005, this fraud came out and said, oh yeah, it works perfect for this. Well, why is he saying the other now? It's because he has a vested interest in all of the medical organizations and companies that are researching vaccines. It's money. This guy has as much ethics and personal integrity as a Puerto Rican whore. Not that I've ever been to Puerto Rico. I have this data. If you wish, you can go there and read about it and find out that everybody's saying the same thing. We're being lied to. We're being played. This whole thing is utterly ridiculous, and I guarantee you there will come a point when people finally say enough of this crap. At least I hope we come to that point. Now we're getting into the category of the liberal psychosis. This is the party of racism, intolerance, anger, hate, violence, and fear. Or in other words, the Democrat Party. There was a poll taken of college students, and this was done at 55 campuses. And they asked over 20,000 students the question. And it was about options for action to protest a campus speaker. Okay, to protest a campus speaker. This is, obviously these are communist organizations. All colleges in the United States are. So to protest a campus speaker, meaning that there would be a conservative speaker showing up. Whether it's black or white, it doesn't really matter to them because the communists hate anything that's conservative. Now, when I was young and I was going to Berkeley, I would say maybe 3-4% of the students there were radical and would say, we need to fight, we need to riot, we need to display warfare against these evil people, whoever the hell we chose to be evil that day. Well, this poll has discovered that it's at least 20%. 20% of the students that were polled, they could find violent censorship acceptable. That means violence. Violence against somebody just because they were going to talk about something alternative to their viewpoint. That's really bad when it comes to the fact that these are public schools. The children there are being taught communism with my taxes. And this is what's showing out all over the United States, is that these kids that go through school are being taught that violence is acceptable. This is the thing that is confusing me. I'm old school. I've been in war. I've carried weapons. I've pulled triggers. I know what violence does. And I know every time you pull the bullet, there's harm on both sides of that. These people are so entitled in their lives. They have never been raised with repercussions of their actions. So what they're going to do is they're going to come someday, these people, these entitled college students, are going to come across people like me who aren't entitled, who worked for everything they have, and who understand how to use violence and what violence is for. Now, there's been well over 3 months of riots every night in the city of Portland, in the country of Oregon, which is both the country is ruled, the state is ruled by a communist governor, and the city is ruled by a communist mayor. And they see nothing wrong with these riots and the murders and the rapes and the robberies and the burglaries and the arson. And they see nothing wrong with any of this stuff. But a conservative organization called the Proud Boys, which we'll get to that in a minute, they decided to have a rally there in Portland. So the mayor says, oh, we got to have a state of emergency now because somebody's going to stand up to all the Antifa. They're going to stand up to them. And that's bad. You can't do that. She declared a state of emergency, and the Proud Boys went there anyway and didn't have a problem, not a bit. And then we have another communist mayor, and this is in Virginia. And, of course, we all know about what's going on with Virginia. Virginia has been taken over by the communists, and it's everything in there is really slipping away, shall we say. Basically, signed two bills into law. And what these bills do are force Christian schools or any Christian organizations force them to hire sexual perverts. They can no longer, quote unquote, discriminate against LGBT people. So they're telling them, if a pervert comes to your business or your church or your school and wants to be hired and you don't hire them, then you have a $100,000 fine per offense. This is more of the let's shove it down your throat instead of let's let it see what happens in real life. But the key here is that this is the communist governor. His name is Ralph Northam, and he signed the bill on Holy Saturday. This is the day before Easter Sunday, in the middle of a pandemic. And it compels churches, religious schools, Christian ministries to hire employees who don't share their stated beliefs on marriage, sexuality, gender identity. And, oh, by the way, the second law, it was two laws. The second law requires these ministries and these Christian organizations to pay for the sexual pervert surgery to flip-flop from male to female or back. This is what's happening when you have a communist government. You're ordered to do certain things. And if you don't, well, they'll either fine you or kill you. I mean, that just depends. Speaking of a communist governor, you got another one in California who has just decided that all of these poor blacks who were never slaves, but they need to be paid some kind of reparations because they're black. Blacks need to be paid by whites somehow. So they're doing that right now in California. And basically, it's called diversity legislation. And the idea is that he's mandating that all corporations and businesses in California figure out how it should be done. It's just fluff. It's not even real. It's just another attempt to appease blacks and the racists in California. So we don't have white racists anymore. Every racist out there now is black. And that's the astounding thing. So we have another thing. Now, this has happened up here. What I'm going to tell you about has happened up here in North Idaho. The perverts in control of the United States and the perverts in control of most corporations, specifically Target. Target is one of the worst stores on earth because of their beliefs. They are anti-Christian, not just atheists. They're anti-Christian openly. They will not allow Salvation Army to put a bell ringer at their doors. They no longer have boys and girls clothes inside. They're gender neutral. And so are their bathrooms for that matter. So if you send your little 5-year-old girl into the bathroom, there could be, and there will be, and there has been, 28-year-old men filming her. And that was done here up in North Idaho at one point. There was still some of the guy left when the police showed up. Same thing happened in a Cracker Barrel. Cracker Barrel bathroom. A girl comes out and tells her daddy that there's some man in the bathroom, in the girl's bathroom, and he's on his phone filming him. Well, they didn't dial 911. They simply went and got him out of the bathroom, took him outside, and beat the snot out of him. And then the police shows up, and the police pick him up, and they find out he's a convicted sex offender. This happened in South Carolina, Duncan, South Carolina. So this is the thing that has to be done. You know what? Calling the police, not going to happen. Not going to do any good either. These people are so emboldened by the psychosis of the liberals and the Democrat Party. They are so emboldened. Sexual perversion, black racism, insane communism is so emboldened by the Democrats and the communists that they have put in power that these people get away with this stuff on a daily basis. They'll do it and they'll get caught, arrested, turned loose, and then they'll do it again. Now, a lot of you remember Jeff that would call in now and then. He called me up and he talked to me about some data that was happening. Now, Jeff, listen to this. He said that there was an organization that was filming vehicles coming and going from a power supply station, electrical supply station. And this organization is called Mass Accountability. And they operate in Massachusetts. They operate in that area out there. And what they do is a standard communist ploy of, it's called doxing. It's twofold what they're doing. One, they're videoing the driver, the license plates and the drivers of every vehicle that's coming and going from certain establishments. These establishments have been LNG plants, liquid natural gas plants, electrical plants, nuclear power plants, law enforcement agencies, sheriff's departments. They're videoing them. And this is to intimidate them and tell them that we're watching you, so we're going to make you accountable for any of your crimes. That's what they claim. In reality, what it is surveillance of the power grid, surveillance of the infrastructure of the United States. We've caught some of them up here. I don't know what's happening down there or over there, but I'll tell you what, Jeff, if you see anyone doing something like this, you're to call the FBI immediately. I've already contacted the FBI and asked them, what about this? Is there a law against this? And they said there's no exact law, but it is under the Department of Homeland Security. It can be a warning sign that there are enemy agents surveilling an area of sensitivity. So if you see it happening anywhere, if you see it, and I mean anywhere, and what these people do is they claim, oh, this is my First Amendment right. I have a First Amendment right. Well, you can adjust their First Amendment rights a little bit if you feel like it. But the idea is call the FBI. If you see it again, call the FBI. If you hear about it, any of you guys, anybody out there hears about this, get time, place, form an event, call the FBI. This is real. We've got people filming dams on the Snake River. We've got people filming dams on the Columbia River. We've caught people filming dams in California. We've caught people filming nuclear power plants, walking around the power plant, filming everything, the fences, the land. I'm sorry, this is not an art project. This is surveillance. If you see it, say something as quickly as possible, and the best source would be the FBI. And if the FBI doesn't do anything, you call the newspapers. You call somebody. Somebody's got to give a damn. Now, speaking of not giving a damn, that's the problem. Sometimes you do have a problem and you call your authorities, and that authority could be the sheriff's department, the police department, the FBI. Well, a Minnesota representative, a man, he got a hold of the FBI because he had proof that Ilhan Omar, this is that racist Muslim, that anti-American, anti-male, female that got elected to the House of Representatives, caught her organization with ballot fraud, and he turned him into the FBI. The FBI didn't give a damn. They literally didn't care, and they didn't do anything. They just stonewalled him. So he went to somewhere else and told them, and here is what happened. Now, there's two segments, and I put them both together. You'll hear the first one, and then you'll hear the second one.
All right, breaking tonight, a report. It should scare every American. It's about the integrity of our electoral process. A new video released undercover, Project Veritas, laying out evidence of ballot harvesting fraud and in a local race in Congresswoman Omar's district in Minnesota. What you're about to see is an apparent scheme where campaign workers would, if in fact this is proven, be illegally gathering ballots from the elderly and allegedly, we always believe in the presumption of innocence on this program, committing acts of voter fraud. Now, Fox News has not independently verified the contents of the video. We'll let you look and you can decide.
Numbers don't lie.
There was video. You can see the video. There was a video out and about that he has the ballots in his car.
Right.
And talking about the only way you can win is with money. I was looking at them and they were not filled. They were blank.
Who is the one filling out the absentee ballots? People who work with, like, Ilhan Omar. Where do they pay the money?
The minute we sign the thing, the election, that's what you can pay.
Money is everything. Money is the key in this world. If you ain't got money, you should not be here, period.
At the end of this street,
yes,
there's three towers called phone towers.
Okay.
And it's all seniors, and they took every ballot.
Every ballot. They just take them from them.
Every single ballot. They knock on the door and say, your ballot's come, give it to me.
They don't even pay them for it. They just take it.
Now, we did reach out to Congresswoman Omar's office for comment. They downplayed the findings, saying it was, quote, coordinated right-wing campaign. But breaking tonight, the Minneapolis police, according to FoxNews.com, say they are investigating this alleged scheme, which is just one instance of alleged voter fraud around the country. For example, the Heritage Foundation. Well, they have chronicled 1,285 proven cases of voter fraud in America. Nearly 1,000 people convicted. Recently in New Jersey, one city councilman, three others charged in mail-in voter fraud schemes. Right here in New York, the New York Post did an interview with a Democratic operative who spent a career committing mail voter fraud.
James O'Keefe back here on the ground in Minneapolis. Our undercover journalists at Project Veritas have just exposed a voter fraud ring so widespread that many members of the Somali community here consider it an open secret. Many believe if this corruption continues, there'll be no more free elections. And our sources inside the Somali community here allege that the architect of this pay-for-vote scheme is none other than U.S. Congresswoman Ilhan Omar.
Your focus is winning, no matter what you do. You ignore the rules, the regulations. There's no moral and ethics here. It's just the end will justify the means.
Project Veritas has received an explosive piece of tape. The tape you're about to see shows a man buying a registration form for an absentee ballot from a voter, giving him, quote, pocket money, unquote, of $200 and expecting to collect his ballot when the voter receives it. In this next tape, we hear from another ballot harvester who tells us how much money he receives for his illegal activities. Activities he says he doesn't care are illegal. Omar Jamal is the latest Project Veritas insider. He secretly recorded dozens of conversations in and around the Somali community in Minneapolis to expose a rampant voter fraud scheme.
Ilhan Omar is one of the people who are behind all this mess, and they have a lot of people that work for them that make sure that, you know, tasks get carried out, ballots collected, there's a cash money exchanging hands. It's an open secret that everybody knows it, but they don't talk about it.
Will they do it again for the next election, general election?
Yeah. November. November is actually the gearing up for November, yes.
80,000 immigrants votes will swing this election to one side, and then they became very important. They became the focus of this, and millions of dollars are spent to make sure that this 80 or 100,000 of immigrant votes go one way. So it will make a difference. This election now, they'll spend millions of dollars. It costs a lot. It's huge money. Some of the techniques that he uses is to exchange money for vote, and that's not a secret. It's open, and everybody knows about it.
She is the one who came up with all this. The community, she's the one. Somehow, nobody knew about
it. So she did it. She started this whole thing with the pay to vote.
Yeah.
Through our undercover reporting, we have discovered yet another person who claims he was paid hundreds of dollars in a pay-to-vote election fraud ring. His name is Osman Ali Dakhwan, and he alleges both Ilhan Omar and possibly even her opponent in the last primary each tried to game the system in a pay-to-win scenario.
Where is the money coming from?
Election all authority.
The more election you win, the more powerful you will become. The more fundraising, the money you will get. The more money you get, the more you can buy people. It's all tied together. Your focus is winning, no matter what you do. You ignore the rules and regulations. There's no moral and ethics here. It's just the end will justify the means.
Osman clearly has a blatant disregard for the American political process, doesn't fear the illegalities of his actions, so much so that he casually mentions having to pay off al-Shabaab, a.k.a. al-Qaeda, to open a business back home in Mogadishu. Osman Ali says even the election judges are in on it.
But the election judges have to go to Al-Siyah.
Yes.
Ilhan's people count the ballots?
Everything. So the people who are actually sitting, working, are the same people. They shouldn't have those same people doing all the job.
So the people that work for Ilhan are actually counting the ballots, counting the vote.
And they become a manager in the precinct too.
And manage the precinct.
Yes.
So they do all of it.
They do all of it. They do it all. They do all of it.
Well, not only Somali community, American people, it looks like if they're interested in continuation of the institution of this country, if they're interested in keeping this country intact, I think one of the things to do is to make sure that people at least live up to the basic tenets of the constitution of this country, you know, basic rules of morals and ethics. If you ignore that, then soon the house is going to collapse. You know, if you don't do that, then there's nothing else left.
Even Osman, who is profiting from the pay-to-vote scheme, is able to reconcile with the simple fact that if criminals aren't arrested and held accountable for the wrongdoings, they'll never stop because they have no reason to fear. Osman isn't the only person we found during our investigation who admits to being paid, but not all were as enthusiastic about their involvement in the pay-for-vote scheme.
Ilhan has a handful of people that work for her. They came to us to our apartments. And they tell us that this year you're going to vote for Ilhan.
Do you know if they come directly from Ilhan Omar's campaign?
Yes, because the t-shirts, they're not hiding.
Do they like let people know that they're with Ilhan's campaign when they're...
People obviously know.
They all know?
Everybody knows. Everybody knows in the community.
As you've heard from our sources, some in the Somali community feel strong-armed and imposed upon Ilhan's crew. Beyond the alleged confiscation of absentee ballots, we've also heard they may go as far as voting for them at the polling station.
They will make sure that you vote, and then once you do that, on the way back right home, they will give you the money.
How do they make sure you voted for Ilhan Omar?
They will be in a even worse place. They help us at the voting booth. They allow interpreters.
At the voting booth, they allow them to help you vote.
Yeah.
So they walk up to the booth with you,
yeah,
and they vote with you.
Yeah. They go inside with us. They help us, and they actually do that inside there.
So inside the booth, the person goes in and actually votes for you.
Yeah.
So you never even get a chance to vote. Does he never really votes? It's the other person.
Yeah, they actually the ones who vote. We people don't usually. Yeah, they do the voting.
They're standing outside Jamal Usman's team, and other teams are standing there. They walk with you to the booth, and then they vote. Oh, vote this guy, vote this guy, vote this guy. Vote even if you speak English.
So how do they get away with it at the voting center? Why does nobody complain at the voting center that you're letting these people do this? Everybody just lets it go.
Federal law says anyone who votes for others is violating 52 U.S.C. 10307, punishable by up to 5 years in prison and a $10,000 fine. The law is clear. Buying votes is illegal.
I've spent over $250,000 in this election.
Wow.
That kind of crazy.
Just handing it out. They got that much cash. Jumping it out.
This is a big business because, look, this girl's going to propose how to end the money to Israel. Allegheny and the owner of the mall and Ilhan's campaign, the cash was coming from this guy. because the money was being paid me in the mob.
He's Palestinian.
Yeah. He's financing this whole thing. The reason she's fighting for Palestine is because of this.
That's it.
Yeah.
He's pulling the strings.
Yeah. So it's all about money and power. And they want her to defend the Israel money.
That's all this is about.
That's what that's about.
I hope the state, the governor, and the attorney general will take this issue very serious. Now we know it's out there. Now we know it's public. And I hope they will investigate and look into this in a very serious way. And I also hope that the U.S. attorney, the federal level, and even the FBI might come and look into this, because this cannot continue the way it is. It's simply wrong and illegal.
If the strong-arming tactics of Ilhan's crew prove to be true, it is a complete violation of basic human rights. From our reporting in the field, the community seems to be fully aware that Ilhan Omar's campaign is connected to a voter fraud ring that operates with impunity. So this raises questions. Why hasn't the Attorney General Keith Ellison looked into this? Is the head of the DFL, Ken Martin, turning a blind eye to this blatant corruption? Does Ilhan Omar yield this much power? If so, why? Should we be worried that unknown powerful people hold leverage over her?
Since the release of those videos, the Minneapolis Police Department have decided that they're going to start investigating Ilhan Omar for fraud and other charges. So we'll see what happens from there. You know, I didn't realize this, but there's a term, ballot harvesting, and you heard him talk about this a little bit. But in California, it's actually legal to a degree. Of course, this is why there'll never be another Republican elected governor in the state of California. For those of you who don't know what ballot harvesting is, here's a little clip.
As the polls closed on Election Day last month, six California Republican House candidates, including Representatives Dana Rohrabacher, Steve Knight, and Mimi Walters, were ahead in their respective races. However, as the absentee and provisional ballots rolled in over the intervening weeks, all six lost to their Democratic opponents. The case of Korean-American GOP candidate Young Kim was one of the most prominent examples. On election night, Kim held an 8,000-vote lead over her Democratic opponent, Gil Cisneros, and even attended freshman orientation in Washington, D.C., before watching her lead and her victory slowly evaporate over the subsequent weeks. The results drew the attention of House Speaker Paul Ryan. "California justifies logic to me," said Ryan at a Washington Post live event. "We were only down 26 seats the night of the election, and 3 weeks later, we lost basically every California contested race. This election system they have, I can't begin to understand what ballot harvesting is." The stunning turnaround in California of all states can be attributed to several factors, but the most significant of those seem to be the practice of ballot harvesting. Passed as a barely noticed change in the state's vote-by-mail procedures in 2016 and signed by then-Governor Jerry Brown, California's AB 1921 allows voters to give any third party, not just a relative or someone living in the same household as was previously the law, to collect and turn in anyone else's completed ballot. Called ballot harvesting, critics say that the practice is ripe for fraud. Consider Lulu, who was recorded trying to harvest what she thought was a Democratic voter's ballot in Representative Knight's district. "It's a new service," said Lulu, "for, like, people who are supporting the Democratic Party." The San Francisco Chronicle reported that 250,000 such ballots were used in Orange County alone, resulting in a Democratic sweep there. The Chronicle went on to quote Republicans who admitted that Democrats clearly beat them at the new game, and that to compete, they'll have to conduct their own ballot harvesting efforts. Before its passage, a group opposed to the bill wrote, "AB 1921 would allow anybody to walk into an elections office and hand over truckloads of vote-by-mail envelopes with ballots inside. No questions asked, no verified records kept. It amounts to an open invitation to large-scale vote-buying, voter coercion, granny farming, and automated forgery. AB 1921 solves no problems that a simple stamp can't solve." Narrator's note: actually, it does. It solves the problem of losing for Democrats.
Now we're going to get into a little category, and I don't know what to call it yet, so we'll just call it black commie crap, okay? This is the stuff that has to do with the blacks and the communists in the United States, what's going on. I'll read you this article. The FBI has arrested an Atlanta activist on fraud charges after he set up a Black Lives Matter group to enrich himself to the tune of over $200,000. So this guy decided, you know what, I'm going to cash in on this crap. So he set it up. He called it the Black Lives Matter of Atlanta. Had nothing to do with Black Lives Matter. It had to do with donations that were piling in. I mean, he got over $500,000 and bought new suits and a house and clothes. It, just all kinds of stuff. This is typical commie crap. They eat their own. Chicago, let's see. Chicago, it's typical. You know what? Every single weekend, you can expect at least 50 shootings, and around 10 of them die. That's every weekend. This is Chicago, and this does Black Lives Matter? No, it really doesn't matter whatsoever. You recall there was a group of Trump people in a parking lot, and all of a sudden a car came out of nowhere and rammed them and put two people, two in the hospital. It was a woman, and the media said, that's all the media said. The media said it was a woman, and she's under arrest. Okay, that's all the media said. So I did some research on that. She's a black racist. She is an activist. She hates black. She hates whites. She hates blacks who think they're white. And if you're a black and you think you're white, that means that you're a conservative. She wanted to kill as many as she could. This is standard operating procedure for these psychosis that we have to contend with all over the place. Then a woman, a black woman, professional, quote unquote, rents an Airbnb for the summer. And she wants to have a good time with it. And she shows up there and she's moving her family in there. And then she freaks out. She freaks out. She calls the police. She calls Airbnb, says she wants her money back or she wants to stay there for free because it's threatening. She's threatened. She feels her life is threatened. Her family's life is threatened. The guy next door had a Trump 2020 sign on his lawn. Oh, my God. That is so threatening. Now, where does she get the idea it's threatening? From the mainstream media and the Democrats. Where do you think? And speaking of Democrats, the woman in Kentucky, this is a representative with her daughter. They got they're in jail now because there was a riot in Louisville. And guess who was there? She was. Representative Attica Scott and her daughter, Ashanta Scott, were among 24 people arrested. This is a politician. This is a black racist politician who has been so emboldened that thinks that they can do anything and get away with it. Well, one college coach has had enough of this Black Lives Matter crap. And the basketball team, the football team, the soccer team, they all take a knee. And he said, I'm done with it. And he wrote him a letter and left. A couple years ago, I did an article on a teacher's book. There's a book that comes out. Teachers get it every year. And basically, it's the class planning. It's for each month. And it gives you ideas of things that you can do for each month and for each special day within the month. And it's a pretty good-sized thing. And I had a copy of it. And this is what the majority of teachers get in the United States. And the one I got last time was it inferred every month that there's not a lot of white people that should be praised or talked about during the month, but there are plenty of Mexicans and blacks and Asians and anything that isn't white. And oh, by the way, we don't really need to talk about American holidays whatsoever because they're racist. They're all racist like that. Well, I just got I'm a teacher, okay? I have credentials, and because of that, I get the information. I get ads. I get requests for donations and such. And now because there's not a lot of children going back to school in person, they're being taught online. So there are new teaching methods for online instruction. And here is the organization that's putting out this online instruction for your child.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to everyone here on behalf of Rethinking Schools for our session on anti-racist teaching during the pandemic, lessons from the new teacher book. Teaching is a lifelong process, and the first few years are particularly challenging. In the midst of a global pandemic and navigating virtual teaching platforms, we are all new teachers. In this moment where there are blatant attacks to education, with the presidential administration denouncing Howard Zinn and teaching people's history, critical race theory, and teaching the 1619 Project, it is imperative that we teach the truth, that we look honestly at both social injustice and the movements of resistance that light the path towards freedom and liberation, that we examine the justice system that was anything but just to Breonna Taylor, that we say her name, say it loudly, and create classrooms where young people feel comfortable to process, to critically reflect, and to discuss. And so as we explore new ways of teaching and learning alongside young people, let us center social justice teaching, anti-racist teaching. Let us center relationship building to build and sustain classroom spaces, whether in person or virtual, that are rooted in trust and support. Let us dream, let us strategize, and let us teach towards a more equitable world.
That was just the introduction. Trust me, it goes all downhill after that. Those of you who have children in public schools, first, I truly think that you're an idiot. But, you know, that's up to you. If you don't care about your children, that's fine. I'm sure eventually, after maybe the age of 30, 35 or so, they'll realize what's going on in life and understand what's going on and how to fix it. But they sure as hell aren't going to do it from any data they accumulate through a public school system, because that's not what it's for. Learning is a byproduct. It's not the intent. The whole intent of all public schools is indoctrination into the destruction of America. That's all it's for. And I'm sure you can figure that out. Now, CBS has come out because the woman that's running, the woman that's going to be interviewed and the Republicans are going to try and get her in, Amy, as a Supreme Court justice, has two black children she adopted. Well, CBS came out, and this is the mainstream media, and these are why so many people are emboldened to be destructive and evil. CBS comes out and says any white who adopts blacks are only doing so as props. Just doing so as props. Fine. Oh, by the way, just in case you wanted to become an ally. See, that's the new thing. For the black racists, they call white people who are with them allies. So we used to call them wiggers, but that's fine. If you want to be an ally. Now, Kroger, the store. Kroger stores, you've heard about them. Fred Meyer's is one here in town. Well, they have a booklet that they're giving out to all of their employees. It's called the Kroger Allyship Guide. And by the way, I'll have that on my website for you to read. You'll enjoy it, I'm sure, because it teaches you, let's be honest, talking about race can be hard, and doing the actual work to acknowledge injustices and differences and to support and advocate for better and equal outcomes for often marginalized communities can be even harder. And it teaches you all of that. It teaches you how to be an anti-racist. It teaches you white fragility. It teaches you Between the World and Me, and What Doesn't Kill You Makes You Blacker. This is being taught to everyone that works for a Kroger store. Now, I got some information here. It's, on one hand, it's, I want to say, oh God, this is just another one of Big Brother's atrocities. But on the other hand, it could work out. Yeah, we'll see. Federal officials, Department of Homeland Security, you know, they have the ability to intercept all your cell phone calls, you know, right? All of your, now I mean in real time, not record them for playback later. I mean in real time. They have the ability, there's equipment that can clone your phone instantly. And once they clone your phone, now they can, when somebody calls you, they can hear in. So what they do, and they have been doing, is every one of these BLM Antifa riots that have been going on, the federal intelligence officials have been cloning the phones. Every phone that comes up. If you go to a riot, if you go to a march, a protest, and you have your cell phone with you, it's going to get cloned. This is real. It's going to get cloned. I have the article on that. I presume it's because they're looking for the higher ups and the funding aspect of it. But if your phone is with you and you go to one of these places, you got a flag up, and it's going to be following you around for the rest of your life. There's a book, and I'm going to have this posted on my website. It's an interesting book. It's not something that I would well, it is something that I would prophesize, and I have been. It's known as Civil War II, The Coming Breakup of America, by a guy named Thomas Chittum. I'll have a copy of this up there, so you can look at it. And it talks about everything that has been happening and everything that will happen. And this was written 20 years ago. You're going to read this book, or PDF as it were, and you're going to see this thing. It says social, political, and economic forces are pulling America apart and driving her toward a bloody war that may fracture the nation into several different countries. Divided along ethnic lines, riots, gangs, militias, exploding crime rates, mass immigration, rising unemployment, falling wages. There's a lot of this data, and I'm putting it there just so you can look at it. Maybe you get some information out of it. Now we're going to get into the category of government threat. Now, this is not just our government. This is just overall general government threats. Here in the state of Idaho, a bunch of cops arrested a whole bunch of Christians who were in a parking lot in Moscow, Idaho, singing Christian songs. They started arresting them because they're violating the mask mandate. The mask orders, got to wear mask, otherwise it's illegal and blah, blah, blah. You know, here's funny. This is on thewashingtonstandard.com. And this is funny. When I'm looking at this article, next to it, you know, a lot of these places have these ads that run on the site. So here's this ad. What a coincidence. Enter to win Nemo Arms Omen Watchman rifle with Triticon 10mm 3-18 scope chambered in 300 Win Mag. Well, that's how you handle Nazis. Yeah, and that's exactly what it's going to have to get to. I've told you this before many times. You do not think that you have the law enforcement on the side of patriotism. You do not have law enforcement or the military on the side of what's right. These are hired thugs. They do exactly what they're paid to do by the governing agency. It could be a city council, county commissioners. It could be the state government, the federal government. They'll do exactly what they're told to do and what they're paid to do. So if they're told to come door to door and confiscate firearms, they lie to you when they say they won't. Oh, no, I'd never do that. I'd quit first. No, you wouldn't. You'd do it anyway and then have nightmares about it later. It doesn't matter, as long as you got your possible retirement coming up soon. And if they're told to arrest people who are singing. Now, you can have 500 people in Walmart or in Costco. That's fine. But singing in a church, you could have 15 people in a church and they'll come in there and kick the doors in and arrest everyone. You tell me if that's not a government threat. Now, I do have some good news out of this, all of this crap. You know what FOIA requests are? Freedom of Information Act. If you ever wanted to find out what some agency has on you, or if you want to find out what a police report is, or you want to find out what the government did for some situation, you want to find out information, okay? It's always been hard to do because you didn't know where to go. You have no idea who to talk to, who to call. Well, Trump, because he is the most transparent government ever in the history of the United States, he's ordered the Department of Homeland Security to make a Freedom of Information Act public access portal. Every agency is listed there, and you just go there, you register, you figure out what information you want, and you can fill it out right there. I'm going to have a link to it. It's foarequest.dhs.gov. Yeah, and like everything else with the government, I'm sure it's a two-edged sword. One side, oh, look, I can request information from anywhere. And on the other side, it's like, oh, look, now you're registered. We know who you are. Well, whatever. Anyway, that's just one thing. Now, there's some news that comes coming out of the Middle East. Prophecies for the past 100 years, all facets of prophecies, everything from literally from Church of Scientology to the Hopi nation to Christianity to the Bible to prophets all over the world and psychics. The Third World War is going to be coming out of the Middle East. It is right now. Azerbaijan is right next to Armenia. Azerbaijan is Muslims. Armenia are Christian. Azerbaijan attacked last week Armenia. I think they killed 40 soldiers, shot a bunch of rockets over, bombed a bunch of places, and Armenia fought them back. In fact, Armenia captured one of their generals. And the reason Armenia was able to fight them back was because Russia let them know 4 months ago that Azerbaijan was going to attack them. So Armenia was on red alert since then. This is not just two border countries trying to kick each other's butt, because it's now spreading out. Israel and Turkey have gone in with Azerbaijan. Think about that. Israel, Jewish, Turkey, Muslim. But they're both going in against Armenia. Armenia is Christian. Now think about this part. Russia and Iran are going to be fighting on the side of Armenia. Turkey, in fact, has attacked Armenia. Iran is mobilizing troops and armor at the border with Azerbaijan. This is something that you guys are going to need to look at, and you're not hearing anything about this from the mainstream media. They don't want your attention on it whatsoever. This is not just a little border skirmish like what's happening in India with China. This is the real deal. Azerbaijan launched two ballistic missiles. These are not Palestinian, let's light it and see where it goes missiles. These are two large, heavy-duty ballistic missiles at the capital of Armenia. Armenia has anti-missile missile system, which knocked them both down. I don't have anything else on it. There'll be more coming. I'm sure there will be. And you get on the internet and start poking around, and I'm sure you can find some stuff. I know there's that website, world-newspapers.com, where you can go and you can get information about what's happening anywhere in the world. I don't know if this will be on there. But ladies and gentlemen, this is a warning. This is where it's supposed to come from. All right, now we're going to get into Trump. I got so much stuff here. I'm not going to be able to organize and put it in a neat little order like I usually do with all my data. So instead, I'm just going to start reading this stuff to you as I can. There's been reports from the post office. We just had one lady here from the post office. And they have told us and other people that anti-Trump postal workers are just coincidentally losing ballots. They end up in the garbage. They end up stuck somewhere. They end up in the back of the truck. See, they have these trucks that they've used for 30 years, not 20 years, and letters fall. Things fall down and get stuck and hidden down there. I had a friend of mine in Texas send me this cool magazine. It's called Buzzard Roost News. It took 30 days to get to me. And I found out why is because it got stuck between two tubs in the back of the mail truck. Let's see. And these things are not in order, okay? Remember that. So there was a debate between Trump and Biden this past week. And both Biden and Trump had agreed that they would have a visual search for earpieces, microphones, whatever on their body. And Biden reneged on that. And I can tell you why he reneged on that, because there are people who are monitoring these debates frame by frame on the video. Biden was caught wearing a wire. You could see there were two, we're not sure what they were, on his wrists, one on each wrist. They didn't look like microphones to me. They both disappeared halfway through the debate. They were pulled up into his shirt sleeves, but there was one on each wrist, and there was a wire that kept poking out on the right-hand side of his jacket, and he had to keep pushing it back in. Okay, there's nobody knows what it was. It's a lot of conjecture. Also, and I noticed this, Biden has blue eyes. Why were his eyes dark brown and black during the debate? Well, I don't know, but then conjecture again. There are actual implants that you can place on your eye, kind of like contact lenses, and except they have a heads-up display, and you can actually read it. People could be typing you and answering you. I said, when I watched the debate, Biden was not there. He was everywhere but there. For a while, he'd be there, and then he'd kind of shift a little bit, and then magically, he'd be jerked right back to reality and talking. It's very hard to catch. You have to know what you're doing. During the debate, Biden said this Arabic word three times, I heard, inshallah. And it's Arabic, and it means as Allah wills, when Allah wills, that kind of thing. So what's that all about? There's more conjecture there that he's not a Catholic whatsoever. When somebody uses Muslim words, that usually means that he's Muslim, because a Christian sure wouldn't. And Biden claims he's a staunch Catholic, which is a lie, because he's a Democrat, and Democrats are not Catholics. They can't be. Biden's Texas political director has been arrested for ballot harvesting. And we know what ballot harvesting is. In only one state, it's legal. California. Everywhere else, it's illegal. If you did watch the debate, it was two against one. Chris Wallace, which is a closet communist, did everything he could to help Biden win or even stand up straight. This is asinine. Now, let's see. Corporations admit that they bribed Biden. This is there's investigations happening right now in Ukraine. These you're not hearing about them, of course. Burisma Gas Holdings Corporation of Ukraine admitted in court they bribed U.S. Vice President Joseph Biden and his son Hunter Biden. The only issue, now that's a given. The only issue is how much the bribes were. So in the court hearing in Ukraine, it's already given that they were bribed. They're trying to figure out exactly how much. And of course, you're not going to hear anything about that. The director of national intelligence came out this week and said this Russia hoax was 100% created and ran by Hillary Clinton and the abomination. Yeah, okay. Well, the big noise is that President Trump tested positive, and his wife, Melania, tested positive for COVID-19, and he's at the hospital right now in his own suite because he needs to quarantine and be checked and all that stuff. And if you go back a few minutes on my show, you'll realize that the test that they used shows up false positives. That's all it tests. And as a matter of fact, over a dozen other of his cabinet and other Republicans have tested positive for COVID-19 in the past 2 days. All of a sudden, out of the blue, a whole bunch of Republicans and conservatives are testing positive for COVID-19, almost as if they were attacked. Oh, do you remember during the debate, the closet commie Chris Wallace started hammering Trump on why he hasn't denounced white supremacists? I mean, some made up word that white supremacist. And Trump said, "Who are you talking about?" And Wallace said, "Well, Proud Boys." So anyway, afterwards, Trump goes, "Who's a Proud Boy? I don't know who they are." Well, this is an organization, a conservative organization, that's scaring the crap out of Antifa and the rest of the communists out there, because they're conservative. Well, everyone's claiming, including the governor of Oregon and the mayor of Portland, who declared a state of emergency because the Proud Boys were going to have a meeting there in Portland, that they're all white supremacists, which is news to them because 50% of them are either black, Mexican, or people of color. In fact, the person in charge of Proud Boys is a person of color. He's brown-skinned. He doesn't say what he is. So this is more of the tell a lie loud enough and long enough, everybody will believe it. Oh, by the way, they picked a moderator for the next presidential debate. I don't know who they are, but they picked a moderator who happened to have interned for Biden and worked for Teddy Kennedy. Well, there's no conflict of interest there, is there? Now, remember when they were talking, when Sean Hannity was talking about the Ilhan Omar travesty, what was going on, and he mentioned the Heritage Foundation and that they have a database of ballot frauds and election fraud so far, a sampling of recent election frauds from cases across the U.S. Well, I have that link for you. 1,298 proven instances of voter fraud. 1,121 criminal convictions. All right, so this is real. So when you hear a communist say to you, well, there's no proof that there's been election fraud, it's right here. And they name every single one. You can go to the state and find out. There's a state. There's a map here, and that says choose a state. And you can see the election fraud that occurred within that state so far. They're keeping this on track. Now, after the debate, all of the mainstream media communists, reporters, they're hounding Trump and any surrogate of Trump's. Why doesn't he claim that he disavows white supremacy? Why doesn't he claim he disavows this? Why did even this idiot on Fox News? See, Fox News is just as bad as any of the other mainstream media. It's just as bad. I'm not even going to waste my time giving you this reporter's name. It's a male, and he was complaining and bitching about it on the air that people were slamming him after he did this. He did the same thing. He said, why doesn't Trump disavow, blah, 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 blah. He's talking the communist mouthpiece data. He's just giving it out over the air, and he made an ass of himself. Here's the truth.
He has yet once to condemn white supremacy, the neo-Nazis. He hasn't condemned a darn thing.
You've got David Duke just joined, a bigot, a racist, a problem.
Would you repudiate David Duke?
Sure. David Duke and robocalls are out again, the white supremacist movement supporting you. Do you have any words for that?
Well, I disavow.
David Duke endorsed me? Okay. All right. I disavow. Okay?
When we looked at it and looked at the question, I disavowed David Duke. So I've disavowed David Duke all weekend long on Facebook, on Twitter, and obviously it's never enough.
So are you prepared right now to make a clear and unequivocal statement renouncing the support of all white supremacists?
Of course I am. Of course I am. David Duke is a bad person who I disavowed on numerous occasions over the years.
I totally disavow the Ku Klux Klan. I totally disavow David Duke. Ultimately, he got to the Ku Klux Klan, which obviously I'm going to disavow.
I've rejected David Duke. I've rejected the KKK, the Ku Klux Klan.
But David Duke is saying to his supporters and followers, vote for Donald Trump. White supremacists are saying, vote. Do you want those votes?
No, I don't want them, and I don't want him to say it.
And you don't want the supporters?
No, I don't want anything.
What do you think of white supremacists, by the way?
I don't like any group of hate.
David Duke announced his Senate candidacy, claiming your agenda.
Are you ready before you ask the question?
Newt Gingrich said every Republican should repudiate this guy, no matter what it takes.
And I do. Rebuked. Is that okay? Rebuked.
Rebuked.
Done.
Done.
Do you want white supremacists to vote for you?
No, I don't at all. Not at all.
His campaign is denouncing a show of support from the KKK's official newspaper, as in the Ku Klux Klan.
In the same New York Times interview, he denounced white supremacists. He denounced the neo-Nazis who support him.
Racism is evil, and those who cause violence in its name are criminals and thugs, including the KKK. Neo-Nazis, white supremacists. And you had people, and I'm not talking about the neo-Nazis and the white nationalists, because they should be condemned totally. I spoke out forcefully against hatred, bigotry, and violence, and strongly condemned the neo-Nazis, the white supremacists, and the KKK.
President Donald Trump signed a congressional joint resolution that condemns white supremacy, neo-Nazis, and other hate groups.
In one voice, our nation must condemn racism, bigotry, and white supremacy.
Any group of hate, I don't like it. Any group of hate, I am, whether it's white supremacy, whether it's any other kind of supremacy, whether it's Antifa, whether it's any group of hate, I am very concerned about it, and I'll do something about it.
So I hope most of you people out there realize by now that every word out of the mouth of mainstream media, in fact, every word out of the mouth of all media, except the alternative media, like me, is a lie. Every single particle of it is a lie. And it's because they can't allow Trump to win in any way, shape, or form. He is an anomaly. He is not even supposed to exist in this timeline. Hillary Clinton was supposed to have been God already. So everybody is doing everything they can to disavow Trump from anything. He could come out and he could say that I hate all whites and I hate anyone who thinks that their race is better than somebody else's race. And every reporter would ask him, "Are you telling me you hate all whites? Are you sure you hate all whites? Prove it. Prove that you hate all whites. And they'll keep doing this over and over and over again. He's never going to win. He's not going to win. So he needs to not give a damn about what they're doing and what they're saying. He just needs to do his job. But it's hard to do when you have all the Democrats, all the media, you have all the communists in the United States against him. Read that book that I taught, The Coming Civil War 3. Read that book. All right, now we're going to get into the topic that's important, because if you guys haven't noticed, it's starting to get a little chilly now, right? Starting to get a little chilly. So what we're going to do is talk about non-electric heat. And the reason I'm using that term, non-electric heat, well, my house was built in 1970 or so. So the heating in it, baseboard heaters, electric heaters. At the time, electricity was so cheap. They figured, let's run everything on electricity. Well, then corporations got in charge of the electric companies and prices started doubling, tripling, quadrupling. But my house was all baseboard heat. That was it. And I ended up handling that and changing that totally. A lot of you don't have many options on heating. And in the past month, I've had a dozen people come in here and ask me, how can I heat my house without electricity? How can I heat my house if the power goes out? So we're going to talk about that a little bit. Now, first off, no matter what equipment you use, I don't care what it is. It could be a built-in fireplace. It could be a fireplace, right? It could be a fire pit. It could be a gas log system in your fireplace. It could be propane heater, kerosene heater. It could be anything, any number of types of heaters. Clean them. They have to be serviced. There's nothing as stinky as starting a heater of any kind that hasn't been lit in 6 months, because you know it's got a lot of dust in it and hair and other crap, and you're going to smell stuff coming out of it. Clean the damn thing. You know, clean it out. I do every year. I clean all my stuff, equipment, every year. Now, you have different types of heat. You have omnidirectional, which means it heats all the way around. If you put it in the center of a room, it would heat everywhere around it. And then you have unidirectional, which heats in a straight line. Okay, so like give an example, an omnidirectional heat would be a wood or coal fire. Okay, be a fire. That's omnidirectional heat. Unidirectional would be like an infrared heater that runs on propane that has a little reflective dish on it, and you're aiming it straight ahead. Well, most of that heat, 99% of it, is going to be going straight ahead. A few percentages of it will be off to the sides a little bit. So you have two types of heat, omni and uni. Depending on how you're going to be heating an area, you have to figure out and evaluate what would be the best source of heat for that area. So if power goes out, that means the power's out. And that means I'm not going to be having any natural gas in my house whatsoever. So I think that's really funny when people say, well, you know what, I'm going to get this generator that runs on natural gas, and I'll hook it into my gas line, and if power goes out, it'll still run on natural gas. No, it won't, because the natural gas won't be running. It's that simple. It's just not going to be running. So you're going to need something that doesn't run on electricity. It doesn't run on AC, which is what you've got in your wall. There are various different things, and I've found all kinds of ways to do this, and there's a few steps you have to take, a few things you have to know, whether you're heating or inside or outside. You want to condense the area to heat. If you're in a house, say you got a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house, right? Typically 1,500 square foot. Well, you're going to heat all of the three of those bedrooms? No, close the doors. Last week I talked about insulation. This is where that comes in handy. So you close the doors. Any rooms you're not going to heat, you close the doors. You take a towel, roll it up, and stuff it underneath the door so that it blocks anything from coming in, any cold air from coming in or hot air from going out. Make sure all of the heating equipment you are going to need is inside in case there's a blockage or something. The exit gets blocked. This is just some common sense. Now, you know, if you listen to the news and you heat with wood and it says, yeah, we're going to get 8 feet of snow tonight, you're not going to be traveling through the snow to replenish your wood pile. So have an area, a space, throw a tarp down in your front room if you have to, and pile it with wood so you're set there, for you don't have to worry about going outside. You can hang blankets from walls to help insulate. Again, we talked about this last week. You can hang blankets from the walls. Like if you have, and here's another thing. Let's say you and a wife are going to be sleeping in the front room on the sofa bed. Well, that means you're not going to be going into the back rooms at all. You don't need the hallway. So you tack up a blanket blocking that part of the hallway where you're not going to be going in. So you want to seal off as much as possible to keep from wasting what little heat you're going to have. Make sure you have a window open an inch to 2 inches somewhere in your house to replenish the oxygen that you're going to burn up. You're going to be burning something, right? Because you're not going to be using electricity. And you need oxygen to create a fire of any kind, whether it's in a fireplace, whether it's propane burner, whether it's a catalytic burner, doesn't matter. Make sure a window is open. Any of the heaters that you buy, make sure they have an oxygen sensor that turns them off if the oxygen level goes down, and a tip over sensor. So if it gets knocked over, it turns itself off. And, you know, people do stupid things, especially if you have children, they're going to go up to the heater. Make sure you have some space around the heater blocked off. You know, I don't care. Put chairs around. I don't care what you have to do. If there's a possibility of somebody burning themselves on a heater or your source of heat, put some kind of a block up there so nobody gets on it. And here's the last thing, and this is the most important thing. Keep all fuel and flammables away from your heat source. You would hear that and you go, well, geez, duh. No, I've seen fires start because some idiot stacked his kindling right next to his fireplace. And when I say next, I mean right at the opening. Spark comes out, starts the kindling on fire. I've seen fires start because somebody hung a blanket on the wall and then put a kerosene heater up against it.
Die.
Okay, so you just have to use common sense. And that's the thing. You know, usually in life, you're allowed 2 or 3 mistakes before your life is over. Sometimes people are allowed only one mistake a lifetime. So don't do anything stupid. And that's the key. You know, in the Hippocratic Oath for doctors, it says cause no harm. Well, there should be an oath for living, which is don't do anything stupid. The two types of heaters that I'm going to look at right now are the ones that I've used many, 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 many times. One is propane and the other is kerosene. Propane, by the way, stores indefinitely. You can get these 5-pound propane canisters like you use in a barbecue. You can get 10-pounders. You can get 100-pounders, they call them. And they last forever. 100 years from now, if you've never opened a valve and it leaked and let it leak out, it would still be full of propane. So that's a perfect thing to store. It's just you got to have a lot of space to do that. And there's different types of propane heaters. Everything from the small heaters, there's a called a Buddy. Okay, those are real small ones, and they're good for campers and motorhomes and trailers and the like. And they run on 1 pound, the little tiny screw-on green canisters. But that's, you know, that you're going to go through a lot of those canisters. To give you an example, a little Buddy heater or a Mr. Heater. These things are probably about 1.5 feet wide, maybe 6 inches deep and about 1 foot high. And they have a plate on the front of them that heats up with the propane burning it. And it puts a canister in there. That canister is going to run maybe 3 hours on average, and that's it. Now, you can get adapter hoses. If all you have is one of these little heaters like that, you can buy a 6-foot adapter hose that will hook right up to your main propane tank. So you can get your barbecue tank out, unscrew it from the barbecue, bring it inside, and you can hook a little tiny Buddy heater to that. You get a 6-foot, it's about 6-foot adapter hose. Home Depot, Lowe's, everybody sells them. Now, there's also a way that you can refill these little 1-pound canisters. That's another thing. You figure that one out yourself. It's easy. Go on YouTube and just type in how to refill a 1-pound propane canister. How to refill 1-pound propane canister. So you have in your house whatever canister you're going to need. And you can get the little buddy heaters. You can get the little, they're nice little standalone. Some of them are the size of a laptop, and they have two little feet on them, and that allows them to stand up. And these things will work. Now, these are going to be, most of them are catalytic. And what catalytic means is that the fuel, which in this case would be propane, is pressing against a barrier, which usually is a gauze that is embedded with platinum or palladium, some kind of a rare metal. And what happens is the propane allows that stuff to get hot, and it radiates heat out. It's very safe. It is no flames or anything. The only flame is going to be on a pilot light when you first light it, and then it kind of goes, and everything else takes off, and the little catalytic heater works just fine, emanating heat. You can literally mount those on the sides, on the walls, in a trailer or a camper or motorhome. So you have the propane. There's also propane heaters you can buy that literally screw right onto the top and mount on the top of a propane tank. Now, I'm going to have links to all of this stuff. I'm going to have links to the sources where you can go and find these kind of heaters. Generally, what they're going to be are going to be a tank top single, dual, or triple burner. And they have, like, to give you an idea, it's like a disc. And the disc could be like 6, 7, 8 inches in diameter, and then a little ceramic disc inside of that. That disc is what's going to heat up. And you would have one of those, or two, or three, or what have you, and it mounts on the top of your tank, and you screw it right into your feed on the tank. Most of those nowadays have a push-button piezoelectric igniter. You put the gas control knob onto pilot and click, 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 light this thing. And then after it burns for about 30 seconds, then you turn it up. Those things you can use anywhere. I use them in the garage. I use them, we've used them in the house. Again, if you're using anything that burns, that thing takes up oxygen. It might not be much oxygen, but it'll take up oxygen. Always leave a window open. Every year during the winter, every single year, at least once a week, we get a story in the newspaper about some family that died because they didn't leave a window open, or they put a heater in their van and the seven of them stayed in there to keep warm and they all asphyxiated. Yeah, don't be that. Don't be that. Just crack a window. You have to be able to replenish your oxygen that's being used up. So you can, depending on the tank that you have, and the size of the heater that you're using, the little disc radiating heater, you can get 30 hours, or more even. So there are different types of propane heaters. There's even something called a blue flame. Now, these things are, they're about $150, $250, $300. They can literally heat up a whole house. Some of these do very well. In fact, up here in North Idaho, most of the cabins that are built up in the mountains, they'll have a fireplace, but they'll also have one of these, what they call a blue flame heater in it as well. And they average about 2 foot wide, 2 foot tall, 4 inches thick, and they mount right on the wall. And you run your propane line to it. You might have a 500-gallon propane tank out in the back. You run your line into the house, into that thing, and it lights up and heats everything. And they're very, very economical. Propane is the best and most logical way to heat up a house or to heat up a space. And in a house, again, you want to cut as much space down that you're going to have to heat, whether you're using propane, wood, or kerosene, or whatever. You cut as much space down so that you don't have to heat up the whole damn house. Now, if you're using wood, you better know how to do it. And the idea is, don't build a giant fire. People are burning themselves out. You build, and I've seen this, literally, I had stopped one day, I was driving down the street, and almost saw flames flickering out of a fireplace, out of the chimney top. I stopped and went in. The guy had just installed a wood insert into his fireplace, and he had it packed with fire. He had so much wood in there, it was just coming up, and he flew wide open, and the intake wide open on the bottom. So we had to dampen the thing down and let it die, and then he couldn't light it again for a couple hours while his chimney cooled. That's where fires come from. People don't know how to control their fire, and the inside of their chimney builds up with creosote. And I mean thick. I used to clean chimneys in Portland with a friend of mine. It's a tar-like substance. And when I say tar-like, I mean it'll glop on your hand. Some of these chimneys are so bad. People have never cleaned them. So you want your fire functional, not massive. And by the way, there are little logs that you can buy that will clean your chimney. You throw them in the fireplace and light them up, let them burn. They burn real hot. They go up into the chimney. They'll burn off all of that soot and all of that tar and creosote. You keep your chimneys as clean as possible. Now, when you do a fire, I'm not going to teach you how to light a fire, but use common sense if you're using a fireplace. Use common sense if you're using, and follow the instructions if you're using a wood insert or a pellet stove. Pellet stove, you're going to have a problem with that too because run on electric. Pellet stoves run on electric. Yeah, there's ways to bypass the AC and use DC on a pellet stove. So that's for another show. So we're talking now propane. Now we're going to talk kerosene. Now kerosene can store 10, 20 years. You have to, first off, you don't store kerosene. You don't store any flammables in 50-gallon drums. Because anything can go wrong, and then the whole thing's garbage. So I always recommend store your kerosene in 5-gallon containers. And add some kind of stabilizing liquid into it, so it'll store twice as long. I've had kerosene, I've had 20 years, literally. And it still burns just fine. So there's different types of kerosene heaters also. Most of them use wicks. And to give you an idea, it's like a round one. And this is omnidirectional. Most all of the all propane heaters are unidirectional. But the kerosene has a round heater, which is very famous. In fact, you can go to Lowe's and Home Depot and buy them right now. It uses a circular wick. It's like a tube. And you fill it with kerosene. And it has two D-cell batteries on it. And it will actually ignite the wick for you. Yeah, every one of these things is a little bit different. You turn it up until it burns good, then you turn it down. You don't want soot. It's just like a kerosene lantern or an oil lantern. You don't want it so high that it's just black smoke coming out of the top. Now, the plus point about kerosene heaters, especially the round ones like that, what does heat do? It goes up. So the tops of most kerosene heaters, the round ones, and these things, by the way, they're about 2 foot in diameter and about 2.5 feet, 3 feet tall. And they all have a bail on them, a handle, so you can pick them up and move them around. They are burning, they are hot, and they can start a fire, so use some common sense. But you can also cook on top of them. That's the key point here, is that you have not only a source of heat, but you have a source of cooking. You can put a frying pan on there, let it get hot, and you know, it's not like putting it on a burner, but it'll do a job. So you can cook food up there. You can also heat up coffee, that kind of thing. Now, it doesn't matter which kind of heater you use, whether it's propane or kerosene. Here, what I did is I have Ryobi tools. All right, they use an 18-volt rechargeable battery. Ryobi has a battery-operated 12-inch diameter fan. So I can just pop a battery in there and turn the fan on. You want to circulate your heat, and this is where fans come in. Now, normally, my house is heated with the wood with my gas logs, and I have fans blowing everything around, and I've talked to you about this before. Same thing with this kind of heat. If you have a fan that runs on batteries of any kind, doesn't have to be a Ryobi, any kind of batteries, and doesn't have to be a big fan. It could be a little 4-inch diameter fan. If you blow the heat, you'll get better BTUs out of the unit. And instead of just having that one area warm, you can, the heat can blow all over the place. So use fans, depending on the time of year. And usually if you're that cold, it's going to be winter. You could always use a solar panel to recharge the batteries, or a generator to recharge the batteries, or, you know, use some common sense and some ingenuity. So you have the kerosene. The kerosene. Now, they have a box-style kerosene heater. And it is unidirectional. It comes out of just the front. So the back part, so it literally could be set against the wall. And the heat would emanate outwards. That's what it was made for. The round kerosene heaters, you put in the middle of the floor. The box style, you put up against the wall. I've got both of them. I've got both of them, and they both work. Now, you have to understand when I say kerosene, I mean pure kerosene. There is kerosene out there that has red dye in it, and these vendors will con you into believing that's just as good. It's not. You want pure kerosene, and I'll tell you why. The dye that they put in kerosene, it's because diesel trucks can run on kerosene, okay? So they put dye in it so that they know they can't use that stuff. It will harden the wicks. And if your wick on your kerosene heater hardens up, it no longer work. So if a wick would normally last 500 hours with pure kerosene, if you use kerosene with dye in it or coloring, you probably got 50 hours. That's the great difference there is. It is a big difference. And it's not a small difference. Now, here's something else. There's also a heater. It's called a bullet heater. It looks like about a 1 foot diameter tube sitting on a 5 gallon gas tank, and the tube's aimed straight ahead. There's a spark plug in it. It'll run kerosene or diesel or perfume. It'll run anything you put in it. Not gasoline, no. It has to be an oil-type fuel. You do need electricity. You need AC because it has a built-in blower. That thing will heat a 5,000-square-foot shop. We used to use it. We pour anything. We pour kerosene or diesel fuel into the tank and push the button, and you hear click, 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 boom. And it's blowing out heat like crazy. You just have to be careful with it. And again, no matter what you use, wipe it down, clean it every year before you put it away. That's one of the big problems of a lot of these things. We go to yard sales all the time, and I see these kerosene heaters for sale. There'd be a brand new kerosene heater. I mean, brand new. It looks like it's never been used, but the guy goes, yeah, I used it for just a couple days, and now it won't light, so I'm just $5. Well, he used kerosene that was dyed. And it hardened the wick. And once the wick gets hard, you're not going to relight that thing. You got to empty everything out. You got to pull the wick out, put a new wick in. Now, we had a place here in town, went out of business, called Eagle Hardware. And they were blowing all kinds of stuff off when they went out of business. And I went there, and they had a box. It looked like about a 5 gallon box, loaded with wicks for all kinds of different types of kerosene heaters. They wanted $10 for the whole box. If you ever gone to buy a wick, you know that wick is going to cost you about $5 to $8. You bet I gave them $10 for that whole box. And then they were also going out. They were selling out all of their round kerosene heaters. So I got three of these brand new kerosene heaters for $25 a piece. They sell for $100 normally. And I put three wick replacement wicks with each one of them and stuck them in my shed. I still have them. I have other kerosene heaters that I use on a regular basis, but I have those for emergency. Now, whether this is an emergency situation or regular life situation, I'm going to go back to the fan things that I've talked about. If it's just everyday life and that's how you heat your house or your building, you really want to start checking out the ability to use fans to circulate the heat instead of just sitting there. Like a friend of mine's got a really nice house and has a beautiful fireplace with the insert and the glass doors in front of it. And it's hard for the whole house to get heated, he says. He says, you got it upstairs. It's an open ceiling type thing. And I had him put a ceiling fan on the roof, on the ceiling inside, all the way up. And I said, now you also need a fan. You need to, right in front of the fireplace to pull the heat out. You need the circulating fan up in the ceiling to move the heat around. You need to have a fan in the hallway blowing the heat down. And he said, well, that's a lot of work. I said, yeah. Well, the problem is that you light your fireplace, it takes a whole 24-hour period to get your whole house to about 63 degrees. So I set up some fans. I brought them from home and turned everything on. And it took less than an hour, and his house was at 65 degrees. You're actually saving money, and you're being more efficient with the heat that you have. The way that we have my house set up, my fireplaces have what's called a heat-a-lator. A heat-a-lator is steel tubes about 2 to 3 inches in diameter that run along the bottom of the fireplace. And sometimes they're buried under the concrete there. Sometimes they're part of the where you stack your wood or what have you, but they go up behind the fireplace, and then they come out the front of the fireplace. And just using standard convection heating system, when you turn your fireplace on, it heats up those tubes, and air will come out of those tubes that's heated. Now, in my case, I have fans hooked to those tubes, so that when I turn it on, it blows heat. If I turn the, this is a problem with the house. We can get this house too hot. If I turn the heater on upstairs, and it's above 20 degrees, within an hour we got to open the windows. It's too hot. So you turn everything down. You learn how to use fans. The heater I have downstairs, I light and I'll put the burner maybe a half an inch. I have a fan right there that directs the heat straight up. I have a fan upstairs that directs the heat towards the hallway. And then I have a fan mounted up on a wall, a little one, that blows down the hallway as well. It really gets the heat down to the other end. We have to monitor this and keep it down low, because it gets overly hot during the winter. When we come home from work, I light the heater upstairs for maybe a half an hour, maybe. And I light the heater downstairs. You never leave a heater running. You never leave a heat source running, unless you have a little electric space heater. You can listen to the fire news and the reports, and you'll see a house caught on fire, a heating source left on. You know, you don't want to do that. You never, ever, ever leave an open flame lit with nobody at the house. Ever. You don't leave your fireplace running if nobody's at the house. I'm not saying it's going to burn down. I'm saying it can. Murphy's Law. We were at a yard sale this weekend. And there were these two kids. They were in front of this Suburban. And the Suburban had pulled forward. This guy was leaving onto one of the kids' bicycles. Didn't hurt it, but the guy stopped as soon as he heard it crash. So he backed it up, and apparently what had happened is the kids had set the bikes in the driveway out front on the street. Just laid them down to go look at the neat stuff at the yard sale. So it was a 15-year-old kid and a 17-year-old kid, and the 15-year-old, I said, hey, all right, let me, look, you guys, you okay? Oh, yeah, we're okay. Bike's okay? Yeah. You got your phone with you? Yeah. I want you to look up something. What? Murphy's Law. He goes, what is that? I said, you'll find out. Look it up. So he pokes his phone a little bit, and then he starts laughing like crazy. And his other friend goes, what? So he showed it to him, and he starts laughing. I said, Murphy's Law, if it can go wrong, it will go wrong. So I said, don't do anything stupid. That's the key behind life, boys. Learn it now. Don't park your bike where someone's going to run it over. Don't leave your wallet where someone's going to pick it up. Just remember that. So they laughed and went off. And that's the same thing with heating. Don't do anything stupid. Never leave a fire burning without somebody there to man it and take care of it. If you heat by a gas log like we do, you turn it off. Now, we do have a little electric heater that we turn on while we're gone at work. That's fine. Just realize those can go bad also. So we always keep it on something steel, so where it's or the hearth, so it's not, if it does melt down, it's not going to start the carpet on fire or something like that. The process of common sense, now I know it's been bred out of us, but you really need to develop it and make sure you have it working perfectly, especially if you're going to try and survive anything. It's the people who don't think are the ones that are going to succumb or be destroyed in an emergency situation. Back to the heating, propane will store forever. Don't store it in heat. One of the problems with propane tanks is that when they get real hot, there is a pressure relief valve on the side, and it'll start leaking out. That happened to us. And then I learned the hard way. I just lost I lost a 100-pound tank of propane, leaked out. You can store it. Store it undercover. Try and keep it as cool as possible. It's not super necessary. But again, it'll store forever. Kerosene, not going to store forever, but it'll store for a long time. You keep it in smaller containers, and you put a stabilization chemical in it, like Stabil. Just be aware of what you're doing. Keep all of your heating equipment in one area so that you don't have to run around trying to figure out where everything is. Keep all the spare wicks, keep all the spare parts, any equipment that you need, like tools, specialty tools for any of your heaters, specialty wrenches or what have you. Keep everything in the same place. That way, in an emergency, you don't have to run around like a chicken with his head cut off trying to figure out what's what. Just the whole thing here is using common sense and thinking ahead. You think ahead in case there's an emergency. You know, you think ahead in case the lights go out, power goes out. You're going to need some light, so you get some lanterns, right? Or you get some candles. And here's another thing, is that a lot of these heaters have piezoelectric, you know, push-button click-click-click lighters on them, but a lot of them don't. I went to a yard sale, and there was a double-burner propane dish that mounts on the top of the propane tank. Brand new. Now, this thing is normally, as I saw it at Harbor Freight for $39.95, guy wanted $5 for it. But you had to light it with a match. So you either make sure you got a stock of Strike Anywhere matches, right? Strike Anywhere matches, or those long-tubed butane lighters, the ones you use to light your barbecue with. Get a couple dozen of those. Now, I don't know how long those are going to store. I was told years ago that butane lighters, like Bic lighters, will not store more than 5 years because butane will leak out. Well, I've got butane lighters I've had for 20 years, and they're still full. They still work. So stock up on that kind of lighting equipment. It's you need to be able to light the damn thing to have heat. So to recap the whole thing, propane heaters. Now, you can go to Harbor Freight and look around, and they'll show you what they have available there. You can go to Home Depot. You can go to Lowe's, any hardware store. They'll show you what to look around. I'm going to have some links that you can poke around with and see the different types and look for them. Don't just buy one and say, well, that's enough. You never know what's going to happen. Kerosene. Kerosene heaters work phenomenal. They work really good. They're a little stinky. So if you got a wife like mine that's, I don't like that smell. Well, you can also buy little additives, liquid additives that smell like pine or smell like rosemary or smell like roses that you can, after you filled your kerosene tank, you can put a cap full of this in. And now when you light the kerosene heater, it smells like patchouli or whatever you want. Probably get Southern Comfort. Maybe wonder if that'll work. So this stuff here, this could save your life. So pay attention to what's going on. I don't need, enough said. SE1.us, survivalenterprises.com. Go look at what we got. Buy something. Help me stay in business. If you have any questions, give us a holler. 800-753-1981. That's 800-753-1981. And we'll do everything we can to help you. Now, we can't take credit cards. So we take cash in the store. If you want to buy anything online, we take a check, and we can take it over the phone. It's all set up for that. Don't worry about it. Keep your nose in the air and your ear to the ground, and pray for Trump and the rest of the infected people out there. And we'll see what happens next week.